Hello, Wild Thing fans. You're in for a treat today, an interview with William Dear. He's the Canadian film director, producer, and screenwriter who wrote and directed Harry and the Hendersons. A quick recap of the plot. The Henderson family is driving back from a camping trip in the Pacific Northwest when George Henderson, played by John Lithgow, accidentally hits a strange animal with his car. Turns out, it was Bigfoot. And thinking it's dead, they strap it to the roof of the car and take it home. I'll let you guess what happens next. For those of you who haven't seen it, you should watch it. Seriously. For those of you who have seen it, but it's been a long time, I feel like it holds up. It's cute. Yes, a little corny, but fun all the same. I'll be honest, I even teared up in a couple of places. I rewatched it a few days before this interview and was pleasantly surprised, which is what I told William Dear.
I try to make a film that's rewatchable because that way, you know, if someone watches this a second time, I try to put something in there that maybe they didn't see the first time.
Did you ever have a Bigfoot experience or a Bigfoot sighting?
No. I grew up in Toronto, and the closest I got to any large animal at my young age of, like, say, 5 or 6 as a kid in Toronto in the late 40s was that our milkman actually had a horse-drawn vehicle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No, a Bigfoot sighting, no. I was very afraid of things as a kid. My mother would give me the option. You can listen to the radio, and I'll turn the light out in your bedroom, or you can have no radio and, you know, leave the light on, you know, but I just sit there with the light on trying to go to sleep, you know. I don't know. Scary things would freak me out. I'm still not a big fan of very scary stuff. So
you and me both. I don't much care for horror, any of that kind of stuff. So where did the idea come from then? What drew you to Bigfoot? What made you interested in creating Harry and this creature?
Well, I think, you know, things like Bigfoot, you know, the Titanic, things that, as you know, when there was not the communication there is today, but at very young ages, certain events and myths left impressions. And when I came to California, I met these two writers, Bill Martin and Ezra Rappaport, and they had written a half-hour sitcom called Harry and the Hendersons. And at that time, they wanted, it was around the Addams Family time, they wanted Fred Gwynne to play Harry with some facial hair applied to him per the episodes. And
And Fred Gwynne was...
He was Frankenstein in The Munsters. And I said to Bill and Andrew, I said, look, I think this is a much bigger idea than just a sitcom. And I said, I would buy it. I will option this off you. And I was doing commercials at the time. And I said, I'd really like to develop this. So I acquired the rights to it. And then Bill and Ezra and myself set about writing a screenplay. And then I ultimately in this... And then I had the good fortune of having Steven Spielberg. He said, do you have a movie you'd like to do? And I was literally within a week of finishing Harry and the Hendersons. And I told him about it. And he took it on and championed it through. And it was really wonderful. So, you know, the idea, you know, came from Bill and Ezra. But it took kind of all of our minds and everything, put it together to make it what it is.
And it seems like there was a fair amount of research that went into this. I mean, you used some of the actual sort of Bigfoot paraphernalia that was out there, and it looks...
Oh, yeah. Once we got into it, I really reached out and tried to learn as much as I could about the various sightings, find these people who said they had made castings, you know, get copies of these castings. We still have castings to this day of people that, you know, swear these are Bigfoot castings. But I believed some of the accounts, you know, because there was no reason not to, because of certain similarities and stuff of the creature's habit. And there was something else. It was a phenomenon that happened when we were in the woods. And that is, because one of the things about a Bigfoot, you know, in some of the myth that we researched in our discovery was that people miss seeing them because if something just sort of stands still in the woods and is not, you know, bright orange or something, that your eye will probably miss it. You know, the human eye will probably miss it. And so it was like, you know, the Bigfoot could be standing 20, 30 feet from you and you would never know he's there. And in the very last scene of the movie, when this whole family of Bigfoot come to life, they were just standing there in front of the lens, you know, not moving. And my producer, Richard Bain, my co-producer, he said, Bill, I mean, is this really going to work? I mean, I can see them all standing there. I said, I know you can see them all standing there, you know, but you aren't seeing the movie frame, you know, as it exists as a movie frame. And what happened was, when Harry goes to turn away and you're just looking at the scene, there was no special effects involved at all. Each of those creatures was standing there, just dead still in front of your eyes. And when Harry moved away, they all turned and moved. And when Richard, my producer, saw it on the monitor, he was like, oh my goodness, wow.
I had the exact same reaction. My husband and I were watching it, and you don't see them. If you didn't know they were there, you wouldn't know they were there.
Yeah, it was very interesting, because you had to let your mind, when we were filming it, you had to let your mind go to where, how it was going to be rendered and perceived, you know, not exactly what was in front of your eyes. You know, you had to give way to that magic of movies, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious about the characters Jacques Lafleur and Wallace Wrightwood. Were they modeled on anyone in particular?
No, I think there was a Frenchman in our research who was had said in many articles sort of counter to those that would take a more peaceful look at a Bigfoot if it were to exist. And he was determined to hunt down the Bigfoot, and if there was one, he was going to make a trophy out of it. And I kind of modeled Lafleur after that. Lafleur's original name was DuPont, which but I couldn't get it cleared for some reason. Universal couldn't clear it because I thought that name had a certain underpinning of menace. And then the Don Amici character, Wrightwood was, I just wanted somebody who was a believer and was the kind of person that you knew would take to his grave the belief, you know, had he never seen one. That's why the scene where he sees Harry is, it to me, is still a very emotional scene, you know. So I wanted that side. I wanted at the very end, I wanted the villain, of course, to also see that side.
That scene where Wrightwood sees him for the first time, I just thought that was fantastic, largely because, you know, Grover Krantz, who was my grandfather's cousin, he was the country's preeminent academic expert on Bigfoot back in the 90s.
And is he a believer? Was he? Is he? I don't.
He passed away, but he was. In fact, he said belief is the wrong word. He says, I know it's real. Belief is a faith thing. I know it's real. I know it's out there, but he never had a sighting. He had footprints, but he died without ever knowing if it would be proven.
Well, footprints are pretty good. I've never seen a real footprint. I've seen, you know, impressions, both plaster and wax. Interesting. You talk about Wallace Wrightwood. I'll tell you a story. We had the opportunity to meet Quentin Tarantino a number of years ago, and he came up and introduced himself, and we talked for quite a bit. And I was there with my family and my son Oliver, and it was really a wonderful time. And he said, "I have a confession to make to you." He said, "I took a line from Harry and the Hendersons, and I gave it to Harvey Keitel in From Dusk Till Dawn." And I said, "Well, what line was it?" And he says, "It's when Don Amici, when Wrightwood looks in the mirror," and he says, "Every morning I get up and look in the mirror and ask myself if I'm crazy." Well, I wrote that line because I kind of love the irony of it. And he said he took it and he gave it to Harvey Keitel. So I immediately went home and put on Dusk Till Dawn. And sure enough, Harvey Keitel's driving along. He flips down his mirror in his motorhome and one morning and says that line. You know, so it was kind of nice. And when the special part of that was we were just doing a special version of Harry with the director's commentary. So as that scene came up, I got to sort of incorporate the Tarantino story into the scene. So,
oh, that's kind of a nice little nod. Right from the outset, the humans seem pretty bloodthirsty. Is that something that you were trying to imply?
No, I think probably I probably hit that a little too hard in the screenplay. I didn't mean to make everybody seem so bloodthirsty. That's the first time I've heard that term put to it, but it's really kind of interesting because both John Lithgow and David Suchet both were, you know, using, you know, their first reaction was to go to the gun, you know, so interesting. No, I think probably because Harry was a bigger than life character, I really kind of chose, and this is growing up as a young kid in a in the Uptown Theater in Toronto that my mom managed before we even had a TV at home. So movies were bigger than life for me. And I think when this opportunity came along and Harry was such a bigger than life character, I kind of wanted the movie to be, let's say, on the bigger than life side rather than just, you know, real normal or a reality, real reality based film. I wanted it I wanted it to be able to carry the magic of having, you know, this creature come to life in the film. So.
Yeah. And he really does. Like his facial expressions they're priceless, really. You know, just the way he grimaces and grins and looks sort of to the side. And
well, one of the things that when I wrote Harry in the screenplay, and not many people realize this, but we never described Harry. He was never described in the screenplay because I always wanted him to be just something that finally we saw and it was visualized. And I went to Rick Baker, who had won an Oscar already for American Werewolf. I had about 40 pages of the script and a little sculpture I had done of Harry. And with a happy face on one side and an angry face on the other, and you could put your hand over it, he'd be happy or he'd be angry. And I introduced myself and said I would like him to do my movie. I didn't have any money yet. And he said, well, thank you so much for thinking of me, but no, I can't do that. And I just never stopped sort of persisting. And when I got the opportunity to do the movie through Amblin, I went back to Rick, and he was the first person I went to, you know, and of course he said yes. So that was his second Oscar. So, but one of the things I was getting to is that in designing the creature, I had a real specific look I wanted, but I insisted that whatever Rick's makeup was with the prosthetics and the motors inside the face and everything, the elongated head, the actor had to be able to use his real eyes because Rick had suggested using mechanical eyes that we could do this and that. And I said, no, I have to have the real eyes of the actor. So the only thing we were sort of, I would still go along with changing was the color of his pupils. And it was really important when you say how expressive Harry is, I really think it goes back to the fact that we really kept the actor's eyes alive in the prosthetic face.
I did not realize that those were his real eyes, but they did look very realistic. So that is definitely part of why he is such a character in this.
It's fun to work with people also, like in creating it, Rick Baker. At the time we did the movie, the only real Bigfoot evidence that they call evidence was the Patterson film. And everybody's kind of seen it. It's a big loping, you know, Bigfoot kind of sideways walking across the screen. And Rick Baker swears it's a suit. And, you know, various people, you know, have their opinions. Various experts have their opinions, you know. But that was Bigfoot. That was Bigfoot until, let's just say, we created Harry. And then Harry, to me, has, I don't want to, you know, it's, I don't want this to sound wrong, but it has, I really believe since it came out in 1986 that it has redefined the Bigfoot until somebody does a better or more memorable job.
Do you think this movie would have been different if you had done it in the present, if you had said
if it? I had done this movie say, in the past 3 or 4 years? Oh, I'm sure it would be much different, yeah. Because I think back then, like you say, with the 80s and the things that were happening back then, you could sort of, like I said, you could play it a little more cartoony, you know, and I don't mean that in a really corny, super slapstick way. I just mean that things could be a little bigger than life, you know, as simple and wonderful as stories are like E.T., you know, the simplicity of that, you know, it just was right there and said, if you don't want to believe it, don't believe it. But, you know, we're going to show it to you the way we want to show it to you. You know what I mean? And that's sort of the attitude that. And then, you know, things got a little too real, a little too serious. I like things that are light and lyrical, you know? Why not? And now it's almost a little too spectacular because, you know, when things that, you know, effects that used to wow you become kind of commonplace, you know, I don't know. I still love a little story that tugs at my heart and sort of makes me cry, you know? The way I look at movies and stories, you know, I want some emotion in there, you know? I don't want all this flash and dazzle.
How did Harry and the Hendersons rank with all the other movies you've directed and written and worked on in terms of personal?
Well, I have sort of three favorites. I have Harry and the Hendersons is, of course, my favorite. Angels in the Outfield, which I directed. I didn't write, but I directed. It's a really favorite film of mine. And The Perfect Game, which unfortunately didn't get a very wide release. But Harry's, you know, I'm very grateful that, you know, when people I don't go around, you know, with a sign on, but someone will say, Bill's a film director, and they go, what have you done? I'm very grateful to say that I didn't do the Tumbling Ninja 7. You know, I'm lucky to say I have Harry and the Hendersons and Angels in the Outfield. And when they recognize a title, it's very gratifying. You know, you feel, wow, that person remembered that.
That was William Dear, writer and director of Harry and the Hendersons, which, by the way, won an Academy Award for Best Makeup. I hope you're enjoying Wild Thing. Please leave us a rating wherever you get your podcasts. And you can follow us on social media at Wild Thing Pod. And check out our website, wildthingpodcast.com.